We want respect for both sides. Those who have legitimate complaints, legitimate demands, we hope that both sides get justice.
I see. You are not willing or ready to say then whether you feel that Israel does have a right to exist in that part of the world or doesn't.
No, I don't care to.
I see. What about Jews? You've been, your movement going back years has been accused of being anti-Semitic. Is that a legitimate charge?
No, it's not. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he told us that he says, if you want good meat, buy from the Jews.
Okay.
He wouldn't have advised us to buy kosher meats from the Jews if he was anti-Semitic.
On the other hand, in a book published last year, you wrote, and I quote, "The ancient Jew took the knowledge of ancient Egypt and devised a scheme to turn it upside down so that they could hide it and get control of the world. His wicked grafted mentality gives you a false, distorted, grafted idea of reality." Isn't that in fact an indictment of all Jews?
No, it's not.
What does that mean?
The Bible say, you wicked children of Israel. Is the Bible indicting all Jews because they say you're wicked? They're speaking to those who did the crimes. So when I speak of Jacobites, ungodly Jews, I'm not indicting all Jews.
You are speaking only of
those Jews who are guilty of those crimes.
I see. Politics. Direct involvement in politics was one of the things that your father, for most of his life, shunned, although at times he did suggest the possibility of getting involved in electoral politics. C. Eric Lincoln, in his book, The Black Muslims in America, predicted that if voting ever were encouraged among Muslims, a Muslim bloc, even in a large city, could be the determining factor in the balance of political and economic power. You've now opened that political possibility by totally lifting the ban on voting. Where is that going? Can we expect to see Wallace Muhammad endorsing candidates, running his own candidates, or will you be sitting back?
Well, what I would like to see and what the staff, the leaders of the Royal Community of Islam in the West would like to see regarding political involvement is the community, not only our community, but the outer community too, all of the Bilalians, become more aware of the political nature of the society, of American society, and the political demands that are on every citizen, every adult citizen. And we believe that voters, education, political education, is what will help us more than anything else. If our people are informed properly, then we'll take a more active part in the politics of America.
Well, let me state the question once more. Can you conceive of yourself, I don't believe you have as yet, but can you conceive of yourself endorsing a particular candidate in a particular race?
No, I have taken the position that the leaders of the Royal Community of Islam should not use the community politically, should not support candidates as a bloc, that is. We should not give bloc support to candidates, but we should do our best to show the strength of candidates and the weaknesses of candidates to the members of our community, so that our community, the members of our community, will be able to make the best choice.
One of the charges that some outside observers had made of the Nation of Islam under your father was that voting and political participation were avoided in order to conceal numbers. The suggestion was made that if a Muslim bloc vote were put together, it would in fact expose and reveal for the first time what strength actually was there or wasn't there. Membership numbers have been a fairly guarded secret in the Nation of Islam. How does that stand today? Are you prepared to say how many members the world community of Islam in the West can claim.
Well, certainly. There's no secret.
Mm-hmm.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as I said, he was leading a social reform movement. And his strategy was quite different. And it was need for him to keep things secret. But we have an open society now.
Okay, what's the figure today?
The figure today is well over 70,000 active, regularly supporting members, and well over 1.5 million who belong to the religion of Islam under the world community.
Do you see that growing?
Yes, certainly. Yeah. Every day is growing. And I'm sure today we'll see the proof of that at the Felt Forum Stadium.
How about the status of women in the world community of Islam? Are women full and equal members with full and equal rights and responsibilities?
Yes, yes. In the religion of Islam, al-Islam, women have equal rights. The Quran says you have rights against them and they have rights against you. And in the eyes of God, there's no distinction between the sexes as such. But the life, the community life, have inherited social roles that were formed over a period of the thousands and thousands of years. So we have inherited those roles, and we feel that the role of a man should be a leader in the home and leader in the public life. We feel that the man should be a leader, but he shouldn't enslave his woman. If the woman has abilities in business, the Quran says that a woman is entitled to inherit wealth, and she's entitled to go in business for herself. So we can't discriminate or enslave women.
In 1977, the feminist thinking being what it is, and I think it cuts across racial lines and class lines, don't you run the risk of alienating large numbers of potential female converts mm-hmm. by saying man must be leader?
Yes.
That's the way it has to be.
Well, that's the way it is.
I see.
I didn't make it that way.
I see.
Now, we want women leadership. I ask for women leadership. In fact, I feel that the world now is more in need of women leadership than man leadership.
Are there any women ministers or imams?
Yes, there are women instructors, they call them instructors. No imams.
No imams.
Imam is a role that requires the male. And the reason why is because if the woman becomes the imam, then the children in the home, believing their religion and knowing the role of imam in the community, they'll begin to think that the mother is the father.
Do you expect this will change?
No.
Might you be forced to change because of feeling from within the world community?
No. The best service women can do for society is to give the world mother leadership. Mother leadership. I don't mean limit themselves to the domestic role of mother, but the same kind of concern that a good mother shows in the home for her husband, for her children, we need women in the public life to show that. We need women in every walk of life to keep the mother role strong. Even if they're not mothers, we need that role to remain strong.
Okay, we've talked about some of the very substantive changes you've made, but you've also made a lot of changes in names. We've touched on some of those, Masjid for mosque and Bilalian for black, Imam for minister. There are many more, but I wonder if we might focus on one that I think has had great symbolic importance, not only within the Nation of Islam, but for outsiders as well, and that is the X. The X was an emotionally charged, heavy statement, which I think drew a great deal of respect and admiration from those outside of the movement as well as within. You've now, I believe, asked your followers to take an Arabic or African or Islamic name mm-hmm. by this Christmas, the X is being done away with. Mm-hmm. Why?
Simply because the X is symbolic. And there is a tendency in people who don't have themselves solidly grounded in reality to grab symbolism, mysticism, things that have no meaning except just to mystify, no purpose except just to mystify. Now, I don't think that all of us are like that, but there is a large number of misinformed people, Galileans, Afro-Americans, who grab any symbolism that mystifies. This is, a natural thing in people. If you are desperately in need of something, and you can't get that thing you need, then your mind works to relieve you, and you fabricate something that may have no base in reality. It's easy to sell symbolism, mystifying terminologies, etc., to people who haven't been given opportunity to really know what themselves are all about and what life is all about.
If I might recap where we've been in our conversation, I think it would be fair to say we've been talking about a move from the mystical into the realm, perhaps, of the practical, from the symbolic into the literal, mm-hmm. into something that's a little more firmly grounded, what I believe you refer to as reality.
Yeah.
What are we going to see in the next year, the next 5 years, the next 10 years in the world mm-hmm. community of Islam? Where do you see it going? Where are you going to take it?
I hope we'll see the best of the old leadership and the best of the new leadership come out, blossom. By that I mean, I hope that the community won't be taken to another extreme by the way that the emphasis are being placed now. The emphasis now are placed on moral growth, spiritual development, human understanding. That's where the emphasis are now. The emphasis before were on material enrichment and the separation from racist Caucasians or from white people. I hope that in the future what we'll see is a new upsurge of business interest in our community. And I hope that these businesses will be managed properly, and I hope that individuals, that they will be owned and operated by individuals. I hope that there'll be people who appreciate the spiritual message, the religion, and will contribute from their business profits to the propagation, for the propagation of the religion of Islam.
Mr. Muhammad, we wish you luck, and we thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, it's quite a different style from the one we saw on the floor of Felt Forum, isn't it?
I think he was more formal in the interview. On the floor, he was much more relaxed and sane and self-assured and forceful in his... he was in control of his own destiny on the floor. In the interview, he was at the... he was behind... under the lights, behind a camera, and, of course, facing you.
I think one of the themes that comes through in this interview is what we might risk calling revisionist history. I wonder, Paul, do you believe Wallace Muhammad's claim that, quote, if Elijah were alive, he'd be my best follower?
No, I don't. I think I think, as a matter of fact, Elijah is probably turning over in his grave at some of the changes that that his son has wrought. Wallace did a difficult thing. He again, as I mentioned, he turned the religion around 180 degrees. And in the process, he's had to reject completely a lot of the teachings and policies of his father. And I question whether his father would bless these changes that he's made. No, I don't think. But I think also Wallace might feel the need to do that because, on the one hand, while he's rejecting his father's teachings, Elijah was still his father. So it is revisionist history, and again,
well, Elijah still holds the respect and reverence of much of the community that this man is now heading.
Of a large following. Again, mm-hmm. We don't know how much. As a matter of fact, we don't know what the rumblings are in the background, but there are some rumblings. I understand that there are some people who so reject the new policy that in temples around the country, in several places, Elijah, they still follow the teachings of Elijah. They would not accept whites into the religion. And I understand there are several top leaders who still cling to the past and disagree, and we might in the future be hearing from, seeing some breakaway segments of the religion itself. So things are not really quiet, and that's why Wallace took the tact he did in the speech, and that's why in the interview he's defending himself, strongly defending himself. He has to do that.
One of the people who might have had some question about the changes that Wallace has instituted was Minister Abdul Halim Farrakhan, who, of course, had been the minister imam of the mosque here in New York. I thought it was very interesting. We did not see him on the stage at Felt Forum. Now, he may, in fact, just not have made the trip, but is there any significance to that, in your opinion?
I think so. As popular as Farrakhan was in New York, as popular as he was and still is in the country, it's significant, highly significant, that he was not on the podium, that he did, that he was not, as far as we could see, in the audience, and certainly he was not given a place on the program. It's my understanding that Farrakhan is one who still questions some of the changes. Of course, Farrakhan was disappointed because he felt he was in the line of succession to Elijah. And, as we know, Farrakhan was brought from New York to Chicago specifically to be toned down. And he has played a minor role. He does make speeches. He is acts as Wallace Muhammad's emissary here and there to various groups, but he has been effectively downplayed, and it certainly is significant that he was not allowed back on his home turf.
Yeah, I wonder if we've seen a further clipping of the wings just in the time that Wallace has taken over. 2 years ago, when NET televised the same event, Farrakhan made the introduction. He was here for the people who'd followed him in New York to respond to, and then he beat up the crowd pretty well. This time, there was none of that. Could it be that Wallace just really can't risk having someone who is that articulate and that eloquent?
Yeah, I think a leader, the focus has to be on the leader, and Farrakhan would have taken too much away from that. From Wallace today, he would have done that. However, as we mentioned earlier, Wallace himself is developing his own style. He seems much more confident as a speaker. He's relaxed, maybe even more egotistical as in some points of the program. But Farrakhan would have been a competition for him, so I think it was deliberate that he was left off the program, and it's deliberate that he has been downplayed and downgraded within the religion itself.
Well, Paul, there are still about 5,000 people in Felt Forum right now. The program is continuing, although Wallace Muhammad's speech has ended. Two of those people were here this morning, and they offered two very different perspectives on the world community of Islam. Psychology department at Morehouse College, policy director of the Bilalian News, and special aide to the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad. And Kenneth Gibson, mayor of Newark, New Jersey, who is not a Muslim, but who has been one of a number of black politicians across this country, who have worked at making alliances with the Muslim community. Dr. Akbar, the doors to the world community of Islam have been open to whites now for more than 2 years. It seems that there has not been a rush of white converts. Has there been any sign of whites being drawn to the world community of Islam, and where do you see that going?
Well, I think that in many ways the emphasis on the doors being open to whites has been an outside emphasis. In fact, the doors were open to many, many other people as well. Arabs were not permitted, Africans born in Africa were not permitted, and many other people who were not American-born Bilalians or American-born blacks were not admitted into the world community of Islam. So, Nation of Islam, as it was called at that time. So the response has been one of a slow, deliberate investigation, because, in fact, the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad has opened the doors to those people who are seeking to commit themselves to the tremendous task of actually bringing about a moral regeneration in the society. That means that one must be committed to changing his own life, as well as committing himself to making the society a fit place for human beings to grow and develop. So as a result of that, there has not been a breaking down of doors by any particular racial group. However, we find that certainly people of all races are looking more favorably, with more interest and more concern about the mission of the World Community of Islam. We do have, in many cities around the country, very small numbers of members of Caucasian backgrounds and ancestry. In Chicago, one of the teachers in the school, Dr. Dorothy Fardan, is a Caucasian. And in Los Angeles and many other major cities, there have been just very few whites to come in. But you have to consider, of course, that the World Community of Islam was established 40 years, and only small numbers of blacks came in when it was only set up for just them.
You've also made a new appeal, I think it would be fair to say, to middle-class blacks, to intellectual blacks. Mayor Gibson, you are a middle-class, well-educated black Christian. What does the World Community of Islam mean to you? What do you see the potential being for not only political alliances, but as a force to have great impact on the black community as a whole?
I don't know about middle class, Sandy, but I think that if we view the World Community of Islam as I think it should be viewed, and that is a religious organization, then we view it as we view other religious organizations in the community. And that is one that deserves respect as any other religious organization. And we try to work with that organization to improve the quality of life of the people in the city.
What are you doing in that respect in Newark today?
Well, in that respect in Newark, we have, for a number of years, as you said, established a relationship with the group relative to educational principles, for instance, relative to disciplinary problems that we've had over the years in the city of Newark, especially with young people. We've established a relationship that I think has helped very well with our narcotics addicts in the city of Newark. And only for the past 2 years, we have developed a kind of community organization relationship, which has helped to develop a cleanup program in the city of Newark. So I've had good success with my relationship.
Nearly 2 months ago, you invited a dozen of your city's black community leaders to a meeting in your office to meet with the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad. What was that meeting about? What's come out of it? Has there been any follow-up?
Well, the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad was coming to Newark. I thought it would be a good idea, and they agreed that we could have him meet some people outside of the World Community of Islam to talk about what the community is doing. And I think that meeting was positive. There were some questions asked by the individuals who were invited, answers given by the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad. Hopefully we'll have a continuation of that kind of intercommunication so that people are not just getting their information from the traditional media sources. Getting that information direct is a much better way of getting it.
Dr. Akbar, we've touched on the socioeconomic class implications of the Nation of Islam. You yourself are a man with all the credentials. You have the academic credentials. You obviously have the economic capability. Yet, even before Wallace Muhammad took over, you became a member of the Nation of Islam. What drew you? You're obviously a minority within the world community of Islam. What made you want to be a Muslim?
I think many people like me wanted to be a Muslim, but I think most of us were afraid to become Muslims simply because of what had been done to distort what it was that Muslims were really all about. I think that my decision was based on the fact that I couldn't find the answers I was looking for. Certainly throughout my academic training and throughout the major, most reputable academic institutions in this country, they somehow failed to be able to address adequately the kinds of needs that not only black people, the Bilalians, faced in the society. They were really very ineffective in dealing with the problems that Caucasians possessed in the society. When you consider the fact that the largest suicide rate of any professional group is that of psychiatrists, then they are supposed to be the mental health experts. You begin to wonder, how is it then that they can see themselves as being experts of the mind? So there was a kind of paradox in having been trained as a mental health expert, and I felt totally unqualified to address the problems of my community least well and any other community to a great extent. So in fact, I found that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the work of the Nation of Islam had been much more effective in dealing with the mental life problems of black people at that time than any other group, professional or otherwise. And simply because those answers and those solutions were being reached, I was attracted to it. And I found in it a lifestyle that was very comfortable for myself. And certainly I was initiated into a level of thinking that permitted me to begin to be able to raise very serious questions about the knowledge that I'd received. And certainly with the coming of the language and the direction of the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad, I've been able to more precisely see the errors of the prior knowledge of the Western world and certainly begin to look at ways of redefining that in a more effective way for people in general.
You're enthusiastic then about the changes that Wallace Muhammad has instituted.
Indeed so, very much so.
What do those changes mean to the possibility of bringing in more people like yourself, more educated people, more people who have made it in this society?
I think it has fantastic implications, but I don't see it as an either-or kind of thing. For example, the Nation of Islam had a reputation for being one of the primary religious recruiters in the prison institutions.
That's been toned down some.
It hasn't changed at all. It hasn't changed at all. The Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad has addressed larger number of prison inmates than any minister in the history of the Nation of Islam has ever addressed. He's spoken to the entire prison system in three states at this point.
And that program is still continuing.
Indeed,
as strong as it ever was.
Stronger than ever. Stronger than ever. So it isn't as if we have changed our emphasis and say, well, now we'll go get those who went to college. Instead, we have broadened the scope. And from the direction of the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad, it is no longer just appropriate for those who are able to understand the religious language, the symbolic language, and to accept the religious mystique of the then Nation of Islam, but it now has as greater appeal for that group as well as for those who have other kinds of critical visions that they brought from their own backgrounds.
Dr. Akbar, you're a psychologist. As such, you must surely understand what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad offered the poor and powerless in this country, a sense of worth where there had been only self-hatred, a sense, in fact, of superiority, where inferiority had been instilled. Now that Wallace Muhammad has sort of put everyone on an equal footing for the first time, are you going to lose those people from the bottom who may have needed that support?
Not at all. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad brought dignity to flesh color. The Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad has brought dignity to the human being. And the human being is a much bigger category than the black skin color. So therefore, we can all feel superior now because the language of Islam, the language of the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad, which is the language of the Holy Quran, brings dignity to the human being.
Then you don't see folks being turned off?
Not at all. I see people are being more enthused and stimulated than ever before. You know, probably one of the most destructive things that happened to the so-called black movement of the 60s is the development of a blacker-than-thou attitude, which ultimately destroyed the power of that movement. So what the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad has been able to protect the Nation of Islam from going down that road to destruction, whereby you develop a kind of a black elitism, and instead, he's been able to spread that influence and dignity so that now it affects much larger numbers of people. So the enthusiasm has escalated, because people who felt uncomfortable with restricting themselves to a flesh definition can now feel greater, more superior than ever, and still not feel boxed in by the limitations of their own flesh color.
Mayor Gibson, you often say that you are not a politician. However, if I may, I'll call you a politician for the moment. As a politician, as a black urban politician, we've spoken with the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad a bit about the potential for an organized Muslim vote. And in fact, we know that he has lifted the ban on voting and has in fact encouraged people to register. What are the political implications for a city like Newark of having a registered, solid Muslim community that would participate in electoral politics?
Well, I think I would join with him in saying that there's an advantage to having all of the people who are eligible to participate in the political process to do so. You know, politicians affect the quality of education, housing, and almost all of the other quality of life items. I think also he was correct in stating that you would not expect that entire